You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
This is the Useless Information Podcast. I am Steve Silverman.
Useless information.
Hi, everyone. I hope you're doing well. Today, I have for you a very special podcast. It was recorded a few months back by one of my physics students, a kid named Eddie Tice, for his senior English class project. His teacher, Ms. Montgomery, selected this as one of the best, and with Eddie's permission, I present it for you today. Now, the topic that Eddie chose was gaming, and that's something I know very little about, but his enthusiasm for the subject is clear from the very second that the recording starts. So sit back and enjoy.
Hello, second period English class. My name is Eddie Tice. I will be your host for this podcast. And today I am accompanied with Mr. Trevor Farnsworth. How you doing, Trevor?
Doing good.
That's great. So, Trevor, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I mean, just to start off, I'm currently working as a senior QA tester at Vicarious Visions, which is a game studio. I've always wanted to make games, I think, ever since I was a kid, so I pursued that through college, studied game design with a minor in programming, and here I am now, working my way up.
Sweet. So, you said that you always wanted to make games as you were, like, you were a little kid?
Yeah, I would say probably since, I think, middle school, just when I think the first game that sort of got me into it was Halo 3. The Forge mode in that, I would make a lot of different maps, and I sort of really enjoyed making, like, other content for people to play. And from there, I just jumped into other things like RPG Maker, different programs that let you sort of get the feel for making games without having to do, like, all the complicated programming.
So you were making games, or you were making maps and, like, different mod tools and stuff when you were in middle school?
Yeah, it wasn't anything too complicated. It was, like, things provided by the game. So, like, Halo has a mode that lets you make maps inside of the game. RPG Maker is a software, like, that makes it really easy to, like, design or make RPG games.
So you just, like, figured that out on your own? With, like,
A lot of help from the internet, but...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm trying to do right now. I started making a little game. There's this guy on YouTube named Brackies, and he basically takes you through it the whole way there.
Yeah, I'm aware of his channel. He's pretty good.
Yeah. So, what exactly do QA testers do? Because before, a while ago, so I was thinking, like, game testers. So I'm thinking, like, all they do is play video games all day, and it's just that easy, right? And I'm thinking not.
Yeah, if only it was just that easy. But there's actually a lot more to it. I mean, a part of the job is just playing the game, like playing through it, looking for any issues or bugs. But there's a lot of more, like, specifics, nitty-gritty that you kind of have to do for QA testing. The biggest thing is we run, like, dedicated passes on the game for, like, specific areas. So, like... let's see, one of my first contracts, I worked a lot on Destiny, because VV at the time was working on DLCs for Destiny. Mm-hmm. So I would go to, like, a specific area of one specific activity of Destiny and be like, how many ways can I get out of this map? Can I use this ability? switching a lot between that. Outside of that, QA also, beyond just testing the game, they help out with a lot of like planning for when things need to be in, like what deadlines do we need to meet. Mm-hmm. Almost doing some production stuff, where you're trying to help plan out what we're doing for the project.
Cool. So, do you, like, when you find a bug in a game, you have to report it, right? Obviously. And do you actually know how to, like, fix it, like, as in the code itself?
That's generally done by, like, programmers, engineers, designers, whoever needs to fix the bug. But we report it, and generally you try to give repro steps, like how to reproduce the bug, so that whoever is getting this bug to fix, they have to test it out themselves, make sure they understand what the problem is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes some QA testers will give information on like how they think it could be fixed, but we generally aren't going into the code and fixing things ourselves.
Okay. So, I was reading a lot online about game designing in general, and one of the most common cons of this, of game designing, I saw are the long hours. Can you tell me, like, what's your schedule like, I guess?
So it really depends. Like, some of the stuff you hear isn't true, but unfortunately a lot of it is. Throughout a project's like life cycle, most of it you won't be doing overtime. You'll just be doing a general 40-hour work week. But if there's a deadline that we have to hit, or if we're getting close to the release of a project, you'll probably be doing a lot of what's called crunch time,
yeah,
which is where you're in for as long as you need to be until the product is ready to release.
Yeah, that's kind of what I assumed was like, because I emailed you and it took a while to get back, which, you know, I get it because Christmas crunch time.
Yeah, unfortunately we had a milestone for the project we're currently working on right before Christmas.
Yeah.
So I was fairly busy.
I could imagine. So what is the main game or games that you're working on right now? If you can tell me, I mean, if it's like a new game or something.
Unfortunately, the projects I'm currently working on, I can't tell you about, but
okay.
I can tell you what I previously worked on.
Okay.
Which was, it was all Destiny 2 DLC, so Vicarious Visions made the Warmind DLC along with the Black Armory and Penumbra DLCs.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked on all of those in various roles of QA, starting out just as general, and then I moved into an area lead position.
Yeah, so it's a lot of confidential stuff, and
yeah,
I know.
Unfortunately,
yeah, I know you have.
We worked on it, or we're working on are not announced yet.
Yeah, so I know there are a lot of problems like within developers and like just game designing companies about leaking. So, I might talk about Call of Duty a lot because that's kind of my main game right now.
Gotcha.
But.
Gotcha.
Black Ops 4, there was a QA tester that quit because he was treated so poorly. And then he decided to leak everything, like pretty much everything about the zombies mode. He leaked like the next map. He leaked the Easter eggs for the next map. He leaked pretty much every existing Easter egg that we haven't figured out. So how... I guess, like, how well-treated and respected are you? Because, I mean, this guy made it seem like it was terrible, like, it was the worst job in the world.
So, I mean, I do think, like, it differs from studio to studio, but at VV, they are very good this way. Like, we're treated as pretty much equals with the developers. Because, like, probably the issue that he was having is, in a lot of places, QA is sort of treated as less than everyone else because all they're doing is playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like the outside view, but VV is pretty good to us. We get reasonable hours, we get a lot of, well, we don't get a lot, but we get some say in like what's going on with the game outside of what a normal QA person would get to say. So we get to do a lot of like feedback sessions where we play through the game and we tell the devs how it feels, like what we would change.
Mm-hmm. So have you ever had like an idea or like a change for a game that like say didn't go through or you really are really passionate about but you know didn't get approved, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, since I've been working too on VV, it hasn't necessarily been anything there. But in terms of like, if it's okay, I can talk about like my college experience with working on games there.
Mm-hmm.
So early on in college, I think it was my sophomore year, because I majored in game design, so we did a lot of projects each year. There's one project that we were working on. It was just a standard first-person shooter, just kind of getting practice in. But we wanted to have a bunch of different levels. And I had this great idea for this one level with this big boss, but my team was only like 5 people. So, the unfortunate thing there was, with that, plus a bunch of other projects to work on over the course of a couple months for a semester, we didn't have enough time, so I overscoped and ended up not getting to make this cool big boss fight level for our game, and we ended up just having to ship with a couple levels.
Yeah, I could see how, like, having a huge vision for a game and being, you know, just not having enough time and everything, I could see how that could be a really big problem.
Scope is definitely one thing that, even in the professional level, people constantly are working on trying to get better at, like, figuring out how much you need to put in the game or how much you can afford to work on to a single game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, at what point do you have to put the game's needs over the community's wants? So, basically, I'm talking about Modern Warfare. Modern Warfare 2019. You know, the community wants the minimap reverted. And Infinity Ward says, no, it's not our vision. And I guess the community doesn't really just understand why they're doing that. So, I don't know, can you... I just want to hear your point of view on that, I guess.
For that specifically, that specific example I'm not too familiar with. However, yeah. I mean, in general, with looking at, like, the game plan versus what the community is asking for, some of it comes down to just technical ability. That one specifically doesn't, but like if there's something that a game you just can't do, like you can't get the programming to work for it, sometimes there's that situation. But in terms of like weighing your design, like your vision over the community's, I personally feel like it depends on how it impacts the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it impacts the game in a way that makes it different from what you would expect, like, if, I guess, taking Call of Duty on, like, a very big tangent, what if, like, the community wanted there to be just a bunch of swords in the game? You just change all the guns to swords, and the community was asking for that, but that heavily differs from what your vision of this first-person shooter would be. That's where you draw the line. But I guess minor things, it really depends. A lot of the times it's just based on what the creative director or the leads of the project really value in the game.
Mm-hmm. So like say like this little change of the mini map, like, I mean, I say little, but how big really is it? Like, how much work does it take to, like, I don't know, say like a bug fix or something, or like something. So,
what was the change again? I know you said it was for the minimap, but what was the, like, proposed change?
Oh, for the minimap, it used to show red dots on the minimap when people were firing, mm-hmm. people on the other team were firing. Now it doesn't.
Okay. So that actually, it's not too major, but that does touch on a lot of areas. So, like, something that you would think is, like, an easy just code change, that would probably need UI artists to make changes to the UI to show that. It would need QA testing to make sure it's working correctly. It would definitely need programmers, obviously, to change it so that you're always seeing the dots show up. So a lot of things that seem small tend to be a little bit bigger than you'd expect, just because it has to go through so many different people or different areas of game design just to get it working.
Mm-hmm.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
So, if you don't meet the community's wants, do you feel like you failed? As in, like, you know, not as in the community wants a bunch of swords instead of guns, but
yeah,
like...
but like that.
Yeah.
That specific thing, yeah. It really depends. Like, sometimes it feels like a failure if you're not living up to what the community expects. And then other times, it's sort of a situation where maybe that the community just doesn't understand what you're going for, which it is an issue. It means that you need to communicate better, but in terms of the game itself, it might not be viewed as a failure. It might just be viewed as, like, we didn't communicate what we were trying to go for, like, the vision that we had.
Mm-hmm. So have you ever worked on, like, a game? Well, I know you said, like, there was this one game that you worked on in college that you had this idea for that didn't work, but have you ever worked on a game that overall just got negative reviews or like negative criticism, I guess?
I wouldn't say overall negative, but the Destiny DLC that we worked on, it was definitely hit or miss. So it was a lot of mixed reviews. Specifically, I think which one was it? Our Black Armory DLC, which was, I believe, the second in the season pass, was hit with definitely a lot of mixed reviews. Some people really loved it. Some people really hated it.
So do you feel like you could have maybe made it better, or?
I think overall, as a team, I think there were a lot of improvements we could make. One of the big issues we ran into on that project was just time. We didn't have enough time to do everything we wanted, which was, again, just scoping, like trying to figure out how much we can fit into the DLC in the short amount of time we had.
Mm-hmm. So, did you learn from that experience, I guess?
Definitely. I mean, we did one more Destiny DLC after that, and for one thing, we kept our scope smaller on that DLC so we could hit everything we wanted, but we also, like, as a studio, they gave us more time to work on this one, mm-hmm. which is a big thing. We also, in 2A specifically, we did a lot of different planning. So in the first DLC, when we didn't have enough time, part of it was we didn't have a lot of testing time to look at the game and catch bugs. So moving on to our final DLC, we planned things out a lot more, and we started testing things a lot earlier than we normally did.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what advice can you give to someone who is looking to get into the game designing field?
I would say first, if you haven't chosen, choose a discipline, like a specialized area to go into, since game design is broken into a ton of different things. even within like the design field, there's like, do I want to design the character? Do I want to design AI? But then there's the big major three are design, art, and programming. And once you choose that, I'd say just start working on things. Like, whether it's in your free time, just make some games, look at some tutorials. Any practice you get definitely helps going forward. And it gives you a lot of experience for once you get into the actual like game design field or work.
So it's a lot of doing things on your own rather than learning in a classroom.
Yeah, especially, well, at least in my scenario in college, the game design major that I took was a little bit in the classroom, a lot out on your own, and I think that definitely helps me. I learned a lot from just going to YouTube or looking things up on Google and just figuring out and experimenting.
Gotta love Google.
Yeah, it's a real nice or a real good way to figure out like how to do something or how to program something specifically. I always go there if I run into an issue with my code.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's it.
Awesome.
So I really do appreciate this. I mean, I was looking forward to this all week. I gotta be honest. I mean,
I'm hopefully it lived up to expectations.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Cool.
You did great. So thank you again, and I guess that's the podcast. Unprofessional awesome. Goodbye, but you know what? I'm getting this grade. All right.
Well, if you have anything else. You need from me, or like if you want to ask me any questions, just feel free to text me. Like, you have my number, so.
Alright.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Alright, cool. Bye.
See ya.
I hope you enjoyed Eddie's podcast. I personally thought he did an excellent job, and yes, he did get that grade. For your reference, he'll be graduating high school in a matter of days. That's on June 26th. And I want to wish him and all those who are doing the same the very best of luck. Now, they're certainly heading off into the real world, whether it be work or college, in very unusual and very uncertain times. As for my podcast, well, I'm just finishing up the school year right now, and I hope to get the next episode completed within the next couple of weeks. As always, thanks for listening, and take care, everyone.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Neil.
And I'm Ken.
And we are from the Triviality Podcast, a pub trivia-style game show where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Join us each week for an hour-long game of general knowledge trivia featuring special guests from around the world, plus tons of extra themed episodes.
If you want to improve your trivia game,
or you just want to scream at us in your car when we get easy questions wrong,
then we're the show for you. Find Triviality on all your favorite podcast apps.
But you know that, because you're already listening to a podcast.